This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. As Matt Modis said, stopping the pandemic's stranglehold on the United States may hinge on reframing the choices that face us. Writer Eula Biss, author of On Immunity and Inoculation, says that Americans shy away from a term like herd immunity because it conjures images of cattle corralled into a slaughterhouse. Thus, the cognitive dissonance between individualism and mandatory vaccination. Biss proposes instead the term hive immunity to emphasize the collaboration and interdependence of a community solving a mutual problem. The Reverend Paul Abernathy is mobilizing his hive, the predominantly Black and underserved neighborhoods in Pittsburgh, to build Black Americans' trust in a vaccine. Father Paul enlisted community health deputies to encourage their neighbors to participate in the University of Pittsburgh's vaccine trials. Father Paul, welcome to OTM.
Bob, it's so good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Depending on which survey you look at, between 50 and 70% of the public in general is willing to be vaccinated with one of these new COVID vaccines, but only 32% of Black Americans. How did we get here?
In my conversations in the community, I think there are three primary reasons why there's a lack of trust in the vaccines in the Black community. First would be a history of clinical abuse. Now, I think we can talk about things like the Tuskegee experiment and the mark that that has left on the psyche of the African-American community. But we have to go beyond that because there's the lived experience of clinical abuse, even in our own day and age. We can reference the studies about African-Americans being less likely to receive pain medication than whites and various other studies around health outcomes and the experiences of African-Americans in the healthcare system. And so this is the first reason. A second reason would be a mistrust of government. People see government involved in the inception and distribution of this vaccine. And as they see that, they also, again, reflect on their experience with the government. Many failed government systems in our communities, communities that are underserved, communities that have, you know, poor education, high unemployment rates, high rates of gun violence. And so it looks as though government policy has failed this community. And so when they see the government involved in vaccine, there's right away a mistrust of the vaccine because there's a mistrust of the government. And thirdly, I have heard people talk about a mistrust of corporate America. People understand that there are corporations that are developing vaccines. And so there's this sometimes notion that this vaccine is being pushed to make those who are rich richer. Many people who don't have much, they're not so willing to put themselves in a position to receive a vaccine, ultimately to make somebody else rich. And so just in my anecdotal experience, these are the three primary perspectives that I do believe cloud people's trust of these vaccines.
You're in Pittsburgh, where there's yet another wrinkle that I believe has manifested itself, and that is that the universities are also viewed with suspicion because they're the primary funders of gentrification, swallowing up whole neighborhoods. So you're asked to go to a university to get your vaccine, and they're kind of already viewed with suspicion.
There's no question about it. Universities, although, you know, very often they claim to be places of enlightenment, whenever we really look into how they really, you know, live their citizenship in our communities out, it's very often detrimental to those who really suffer the most among us. I think it's also compounded by the fact that there have been historically many researchers who have come into our communities, who have conducted countless hours of research And the results of that research has served our community in absolutely no way. It's got to be a reckoning for our relationship with these universities. We can't just say these universities are going to help us, you know, promote and disseminate the vaccine. We have to say if these universities are going to embrace their obligation to serve the most vulnerable in this time of great need, we have to do so in the context of a reckoning that I think is part of a broader national reckoning, where we have to understand that there has been too much that's too unjust for too long. This vaccine gives us an opportunity to begin to have those conversations on a more serious level.
So what you've described is, you know, what in a PowerPoint presentation they'd call headwinds. There are many obstacles to widespread acceptance of any of the COVID vaccines in the Black community. What are you doing and what are you proposing to cut through those winds?
The Vaccine Collaborative, there's weekly meetings, essentially, where community members and researchers are brought together to essentially strategize, plan, and report out on the success of recent strategies implemented on the ground. And when the vaccine trials were made available, there was 3% minority participation. And so we mobilized the community health deputies and set them out.
Now, we're not just talking about apostles of mask wearing and social distancing. We are talking about where the rubber really meets the road. Vaccine experimentation. You mobilized people to actually sign up for clinical trials.
I've seen some of these community health deputies that themselves initially were not warm to the idea of vaccines, in particular vaccine trials. You know, I've seen these community health deputies actually go out and engage folks and really, you know, ask them the question, would you do this? And if not, why? And one of the things that's been most remarkable to see, you know, I can think of one example where a community health deputy posed the question, why really would you not do that? The woman answered, well, you know, I haven't seen the results of any of this and I just don't trust it. You know, the response was, well, do you know this is phase 3 trials? I'm explaining that, you know, phase 1 trial is high risk, low benefit, but phase 3 trial is actually high benefit, low risk. If we could get you the results from phase 1 or phase 2, could that help alleviate some of your concern about this particular phase 3 trial? And you have to see the woman pause and say, you know, if you got me some of that information, I might consider it. And that's the kind of interaction that I've seen makes all of the difference on the street here in our community. After the first week, we went from 3% to 8% enrollment of minority participation. So that was the first indicator that we had that this method was actually much more effective than some of the other methods we had previously tried.
If you were the Sultan, what would you tell the people who are charged with the logistics of a vaccine rollout, particularly in predominantly Black communities?
Yes, I would tell those in charge of distribution that we've got to find those places that are well-trusted places in the community that can become vaccine distribution sites. I know that there's challenges with that. I know in terms of refrigeration, there's probably other logistical challenges. In addition to that, these efforts should really be done in coordination with community members who are essentially opinion leaders, who are deputized to become champions of the vaccine. These are some of the things that I think can greatly help vaccine distribution in these communities.
They say, and it's become a commonplace, that with crisis comes opportunity. If the subject is broad mistrust of untrustworthy institutions with respect to the Black community, with the stakes so high, this seems like it could be a time, provided the institutions behave equitably and responsibly and sensitively, to actually regain or to win for the first time the trust that they have not enjoyed for, you know, 240 years.
This, to me, moment in our history represents an opportunity for precisely just that. And when we look at this COVID vaccine, it's got to be about more than just COVID. It's got to be about how we not only end the pandemic as it relates to this disease, but how we also finally heal the epidemic of racial injustice in our nation.
Father Paul, thank you.
Bob, thank you.
Father Paul Abernathy is the founder of the Neighborhood Resilience Program in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.